This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This morning's unemployment numbers were anxiously awaited.
And just what investors and economists were hoping not to hear.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Bob Moon, in for Steve Chiotakis. Hi, you're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's June 3rd and TGIF, because after today, man, we can use a breather.
We sure can. The May unemployment tally is coming up. Emphasis on the up. And it's all because hiring is back in a rut.
Also, the controlling ownership of Chrysler is about to be exported from Detroit.
And how an intelligence team tricked Al-Qaeda's terrorist recruiters. The way they did it is simply icing on the cake.
Those stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
The latest jobs update from the Labor Department is definitely not good news. The unemployment rate has nudged its way back up to 9.1%. The 54,000 jobs employers did add last month was the smallest number in 8 months.
Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch. She's with us from New York, as she is every Friday. Wish it were under better circumstances this time around, Jill. It's bad to be sure, but just how bad?
It is pretty awful. The consensus estimate was for around 150,000 new jobs to be created and for the unemployment rate to tick down a little bit. This report was such a big disappointment because it's a big step back. The news follows good reports in the prior 3 months when job creation averaged 220,000 per month.
You know, the timing of this is really bad, too, because the Fed is close to ending its easy money policy to encourage lending and spending. Does this maybe change that plan, do you think?
I don't think the Fed's going to restart its bond buying strategy when it winds down at the end of this month. And the reason is that it's just not clear that would create a real boost to the economy. Now, politicians could renew some of last year's temporary tax cuts and credits. But, you know, at the end of the day, economic growth has not been fast enough to encourage employers to hire more people. I always think the only reason employers add to their payrolls is because they have to when they need more hands to process the business that's coming in. We're just not seeing that kind of activity across enough sectors to propel consistent job growth. And that's really the disappointment. And of course, with 14 million people or so out of work, we do really need a better job creation plan.
Well, Jill, very quickly, is there any end to this in sight, do you think?
You know, I always say that when it looks the darkest, yes, there is end in sight. This could be a temporary slowdown. We certainly did have some strange factors in the first part of this year, including weather and the economic, the earthquake and the tsunami in Japan. So it could be that we see a pickup in the second half of the year, and I very rarely like to bet against the U.S. economy.
Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch. Thanks for your take this morning.
Great to be with you.
Let's get another take on this now. Also with us on Fridays from New York is Chris Lowe. He's chief economist with FTN Financial. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Chris, first of all, what is the reason that you see behind this bad number we got today?
Well, look, it's a pretty broad-based job loss, right? There were losses in manufacturing and information technology. Even temp hiring was down. Leisure hiring was down. And to me, it follows from 3 months of weakening consumer spending, which all traces back to higher gas prices.
Higher gas prices. And are there any is there any chance that those gas prices are going to start to come down in a significant way that will change the dynamic for jobs?
I think they probably will at some point, but one of the really troubling aspects of trading this week is that the stock market, of course, is down a lot. Bond market is up a lot. Both of those normal reactions to suddenly realizing the economy's not as healthy as we thought it was. But oil prices only down $1.50 today, and that is a disappointingly small reaction. I'd like to see a bigger move there. If we did get oil prices down substantially, I think it would take care of most of this slowdown. We'd see a reacceleration in the economy.
Chris, what about the long-term unemployed? I noticed the number of people who've been out of work for 6 months or more actually increased last month to 6.2 million. Is there any hope for these people?
There is, but what it requires is economic activity, solid 4 to 5% growth that's sustained for more than a couple of quarters. We've had one or two quarters of that kind of growth in the last 2 years, but only sporadically. And every time we've had a strong quarter, it's been followed by a weak one. Hopefully within a year or two we can get there. We're just not there yet.
Chris, quickly, any chance that you can give me something nice to end this interview on it's not so bad?
Absolutely. Yeah, the worst job numbers in 8 months, but they came after the best job numbers in 6 years. Look at those 2 months, April and May, together. Traders are paid to overreact. The rest of us don't have to.
Chris Lowe, Chief Economist with FTN Financial, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
On to a point that Jill Schlesinger alluded to a moment ago, that there's only so much government can do to encourage more hiring. What about the argument that government spending cuts can help the private sector? Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has been looking into that.
Conservative economists say government deficits are killing new jobs. How? Anthony Davies at Duquesne University says entrepreneurs are afraid to invest in new products and services because they fear taxes will go up.
You anticipate that quite possibly 5-10 years down the road, the government's going to turn, point to you and say, you're a rich person, we're going to tax you more to satisfy our deficit needs. Then you're going to think twice about starting this new business.
But other economists say it's not the fear of taxes that's keeping employers' wallets closed.
People aren't investing because demand is slow.
SoniCon economist Robert Shapiro says in today's sluggish economy, government spending creates jobs. Professor Davies doesn't buy it.
That song is missing its second verse.
When the bill comes due for deficit spending, he says, the economy and jobs will suffer even more. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, here's more hope that some companies are still growing. Groupon is going public. Later this year, the coupon marketing company hopes to raise $750 million. Groupon has 7,000 employees, and it's issued more than 70 million coupons. But Marketplace's Steve Henn reports some analysts are still not convinced.
Groupon's just 30 months old, an adorable 2.5. But last quarter, this precocious tot hauled in more than $600 million in revenue. Groupon's growing so fast, Google tried to buy it last December, reportedly for $6 billion.
I don't get it. This is coupons. What's the big deal?
Van Baker is a retail marketing analyst at Gartner. He says Groupon's business is ridiculously easy to copy.
There's literally about 300 Groupon knockoffs in the market right now.
And as firms like Google and Amazon launch their own daily deals, Groupon's revenue seems sure to get squeezed. But that hasn't hurt investor interest. In January, the company raised close to $1 billion. But its executives didn't invest the money in the business. Instead, Groupon's founders and early investors walked off with more than $800 million in cash, according to yesterday's SEC filing. So Baker says he isn't exactly rushing to get this deal.
I think I'll wait for the 50% off deal on the Groupon stock.
In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Well, here in Los Angeles, Bob, customs agents announced a big bust yesterday. They've seized almost 2,000 counterfeit karaoke machines.
La, la, la.
That's right. Well, the machines, they say they're made by SanDisk, the data storage company, but that's a problem because the company doesn't make any karaoke machines. Now, the customs agents, Bob, say that they're going to destroy the 2,000 machines that they found, which means that I guess they won't be playing any knockoff versions of Neil Diamond songs anytime soon.
For more business news and the numbers from Wall Street, head to our website, marketplace.org.
Now for the global perspective, when the OPEC cartel meets next week, it could agree to pump more oil. That would lower prices and maybe help a struggling global economy. But the exclusive group of oil-producing nations won't be meeting under normal circumstances. They'll be dealing with civil unrest in many member states and introducing themselves to a new oil minister from Libya.
Indeed, the previous minister defected this week. BBC reporter Wira Davis joins us now from Tripoli. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
The oil minister is just the latest defection amid the bombing campaign. Is the government's oversight and management of the economy still functioning there?
Only just. I mean, the loss of the oil minister is a huge blow to the Libyan regime. He was well respected in Western circles, and the Libyan regime will find it very difficult to replace him. And of course, there are no oil exports as we speak, not just on the government side, but also on the rebel side. So both sides in this conflict have been losing money hand over fist.
You say no oil is moving. Libya must be dependent on oil exports. Is the country collecting any money from that at all?
Hardly any. The problem is that the oil fields are in the south of the country, where there's a lot of fighting going on. And neither side really is able to exercise control over those oil fields and get production back online. So the rebels aren't able to buy any weapons, aren't able to get money, you know, to pay salaries in rebel-held areas. And here in the government sector, equally, the economy is ground to a halt. The lack of exports is really biting the economy on both fronts.
And no end in sight to this chaos over the Libyan oil reserves?
No, we're into the fourth month of this conflict, and it's very difficult to see how Gaddafi can last out. But equally, it could take several months before I think we see the back of him, and therefore several months before oil exports will resume.
The BBC's Wira Davis in Tripoli. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Looks like the company that made its slogan imported from Detroit, Chrysler, will soon officially be controlled from across the Atlantic again. There's word Italy's Fiat will buy the majority stake. President Obama heads to an Ohio auto plant today to announce Uncle Sam is closer to getting out of the car business.
Fiat says it wants to create a unified global footprint. But as Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports, we've heard that phrase before.
The last time a European company took over Chrysler in the name of creating a global footprint, it didn't go so well. The year was 1998. Germany's Daimler-Benz and Chrysler never got along.
They didn't really get on at an operating level. The Americans, I think, felt they were being taken over by the Germans, and the Germans didn't really trust the American engineering.
Ian Henry is director of auto analysis in London. He says Fiat has approached the merger with a much more cooperative relationship. That meant planning to build Fiat plants in North America and putting Fiat engines into Chrysler cars. And Chrysler has changed. Its owner, the U.S. government, is looking forward to making some money back for taxpayers.
There's a limited number of taxpayers' dollars that's available, so this was the only or the best game in town.
The White House acknowledged yesterday that the government will not be making money on the auto bailout, as previously hoped. Around $14 billion of the bailout fund won't be paid back. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Another carmaker making news is Mazda. A newspaper in Tokyo reports the Japanese company is planning to end its joint venture with Ford and stop building cars in the U.S. Now, Jeremy, you might think that would mean you'll be getting your Mazda if you should buy one in the future from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. How about a Mexican-made Mazda?
There you go.
The wonders of globalization.
Show Marketplace Money how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/marketplacemoney.
The business of selling medical marijuana hit a big setback in Arizona this week. June 1st was supposed to be the day would-be dispensaries could start submitting their applications to the state, but that date came and went without a single application being processed. As KJZZ's Peter O'Dowd reports now from Phoenix, it's not for lack of interest.
Perhaps it's fitting that Bob Marley ushers in this week's grand opening of WeGrow. It's a supply superstore that owners describe as the Walmart of weed. The shelves are full of fertilizer and hydroponic gear. WeGrow is not a dispensary, but it does cater to medical marijuana growers. And right now in Arizona, that clientele includes about 4,000 patients who can legally use the drug. The only way they'll get it is by growing the weed themselves. That's because a lawsuit between Arizona and the federal government has put dispensary applications on hold.
It's going to be an uphill battle for a while.
Dar Mann is the founder of WeGrow. He says the state's lawsuit is an 11th-hour surprise. Investors who hope to open a dispensary have been prepping since November, ever since voters approved medical marijuana. Still, Mann hopes the lawsuit will eventually get the industry moving.
If the intentions are genuine to provide more clarity in order to protect state employees and protect dispensary owners, then I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing.
All this drama began last month with a letter from the U.S. attorney in Arizona. It reminded the state's health department that selling marijuana in the United States is illegal, and anyone who does it could face jail time.
That's a pretty scary business model.
Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn is worried, not only for the state employees who would stamp the applications, but also for the 120 or so entrepreneurs who would eventually distribute the pot.
So if they go into business thinking it's legal under state law, and the federal government comes in and arrests them and starts prosecuting them and they're facing prison, I think that's a terrible situation.
But the situation is already uncomfortable for Brooks Elliott. He's a prospective dispensary owner who needed $150,000 in cash before the state would even consider his application.
It's a nerve-wracking thing. You know, how can you walk away from spending X amount of dollars and just shake your head and say that's the way it has to be? You know, it's serious money.
Business leaders predict the state's medical marijuana industry could be worth more than $2 billion a year. In Phoenix, I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
Today, NFL owners and players will head to federal court to argue for and against a football player lockout. The fight is causing anxiety for fans across the country, but not so much in St. Louis, where Rams fans are more worried about losing their team.
Yeah, it turns out a clause in the Rams stadium lease allows the team to skip town unless the city foots the bill for major upgrades. Adam Allington has our story from St. Louis Public Radio.
The Edward Jones Dome was built in 1995, a year after the Rams moved to St. Louis. Back then, it was a next-generation sports venue, a downtown stadium with adjacent convention center for year-round use. Last year, Sports Illustrated ranked the Dome as the worst stadium in the NFL. Fans like Andrew Wilson complain about downtown congestion and lack of parking for tailgating.
Seeing a game at the Dome is like going over to your grandparents' house, you know? It's like very bland. I have more fun watching it at home than I do going to the game.
Statements like that are the reason the Dome's main tenant, the St. Louis Rams, is weighing its options. The Rams' lease with the city requires the Dome rank among the top tier of NFL stadiums by 2015. And with the cost of new stadiums running close to $1 billion, many fans wonder if football is on its way out in St. Louis. Bob O'Loughlin is chairman of the St. Louis Convention and Visitors Commission, which manages the Dome.
There's a lot you could do to the current stadium for a lot less than $1 billion, but I can assure you that all of our conversations will be held in confidence until we have a deal struck.
But Rams owner, sports mogul Stan Kroenke, could demand millions of dollars in publicly funded upgrades, everything from high-tech scoreboards to a retractable roof. All this at a time when Missouri State Senator Jim Lemke says the city and state can least afford it.
I really think that in our current climate, it's going to be very difficult to get that across the finish line.
The city will start negotiating with the Rams early next year. Patrick Riche is a sports economist at Webster University. He says talks in St. Louis could depend on what happens in Los Angeles, where developers are pitching their own football stadium.
If that happens, then teams like the St. Louis Rams, like the Jacksonville Jaguars, like the San Diego Chargers, those teams could be fair game to relocate.
If L.A. does build a stadium, the Rams would be a likely frontrunner to move in. After all, the team lived in L.A. for nearly 50 years, from 1946 to 1994. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
And finally, word of still another website being hacked, Jeremy, but the outcome here has a positive spin. London's Telegraph reports Britain's MI6 intelligence agency has been hacking an online magazine used as a recruiting tool by Al-Qaeda.
Huh.
One of the issues was supposed to feature instructions on how to, quote, make a bomb in the kitchen of your mom. But the paper says the Brit anti-terror team was able to replace that page with a bunch of cupcake recipes published by the Ellen DeGeneres Show, of all things.
I thought there was a good cupcake-like smell coming out of the caves in...
Be on the lookout for suspicious pastries, huh? In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.